Buongiorno, benvenuto al podcast. What?
This is Double Bill Chill.
Oh God, I thought it was, I'm so glad you started speaking English. I was like, what is happening?
I'm Spike.
And I'm Jake.
And what are we covering today, Jake?
Today, we're covering bicycle thieves. And this is the beginning of Double Bill Chill Oscar Nights Part 2.
Great.
Wow, this season we're going to be going over a lot of Oscar movies since they haven't been announced yet. Mm-hmm. We're going to do some past winners.
Yes, one past winner.
Just one past
winner.
And
then we're getting into it. So next week we will have an episode when the nominations are announced.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will have one that we have guessed will be in the running.
Yeah, which... I think we nailed it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe.
Yeah.
So. Next week we will be covering Banshees of Inisherin.
Sorry, what is it? Oh, you meant to say Banshees of Inisherin.
That's right. How could I be so stupid?
So get ready for a lot of Irish accents next week. And this week...
Yeah, feckers.
What are you feckin' talking about? We rowing over here, so? but this week, get ready for a lot of Italian accents.
That's right.
I
absolutely adore this movie.
Yeah. How were you introduced to this movie?
I went on a trip to Rome and with a class.
Okay.
And so part of the class was watching some Italian films that take place in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of them, and it was one of my first introductions to Italian neorealism,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which I just immediately fell in love with.
Yeah.
You know, they're often bleak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that to a certain extent, I really connect with them because they kind of validate my depressive experience in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think not only that, what makes... them so interesting, especially, you know, post-war, which a lot of these take place,
yeah.
Is that you get a sense of the place, specifically in this one and some others, Rome,
yeah,
which is already a beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really interesting is you get to see not the beautiful side of Rome, but the real Rome.
Yeah.
That's a complex city, but it is you know, I don't like when people talk about a city being a character in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I usually hate that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that here. But what I will say is that it does add a lot of depth and texture,
yeah,
to the movie and to the characters. So while it's not a character, because it's not, I want to make that clear.
Doesn't have any lines.
No.
The city of Rome.
No. No, this isn't Tokyo Godfathers where the buildings are dancing and alive. There's no animism. But what I think people mean when they say that is that that cities and place can give a lot of meaning to a story and to the people that live there. It can
definitely
fill a lot of gaps.
I think there is like a, you know, certain movies that are city movies.
Yeah.
You know, that are really about traveling around the city,
mm-hmm,
and the different areas of that city. Yeah. And that is definitely what Bicycle Thieves achieves.
Yeah.
If I think it is trying to achieve that, and it succeeds.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fucking love this movie. When did you first see it?
I think it was, I remember being introduced to it. It was when we were in a film history class.
Yeah.
Our professor showed us a clip of this movie.
Yeah.
And it seemed interesting. And I think shortly after that, I went and watched it.
What was the clip she showed? Was it the restaurant?
It was the restaurant.
Yeah. That is still one of my favorite scenes ever.
Yeah. It's incredible. I think there were a couple clips, because I remember watching that clip, and then I remember watching the opening. Of the movie. It was a movie, or like one of the first movies that I was introduced to, where it doesn't seem like the movie is about anything. Like, there's not a whole lot of plot, and it's kind of like it can be a difficult movie to approach if you're new to movies or are only used to watching like American cinema.
Sure. Yeah,
it seems like it's very slow and not a lot going on, but there was something about it that was really beautiful and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to go watch it, and I was like, oh, this is incredible. Even though I didn't fully get, I wasn't literate in film as much as I am now. So it's like, even though I liked it, I was like, well, why do I like it?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah.
Why do I like, what is it? What is this about?
Because on paper, not a lot happens and it's sad.
Yes. Yeah. But
this so has, much more than that.
Yeah. It's such a deep movie, and it is saying not only so much about Italy at the time, but also just about the human condition.
Yes.
About being a father, and about being a kid whose dad is trying his best and kind of losing sight on why he's doing this. So it's got such psychological and emotional depth to it.
Yes.
That is, if you're not really paying attention, or if you're just like, don't watch this, don't have it on in the background. This isn't a background movie.
Yeah.
Sit down and watch it and pay attention.
Yeah.
What's so wonderful about this is, you know, De Sica has talked about faces.
Yes.
Casting for faces.
There are some amazing faces in this movie.
Yeah. And it's not just like, that guy looks interesting, but it's like, this person's face has a story written all over it, and it matches the story that I'm trying to tell. So I want to cast you.
Yes.
And I'll show you how to act.
Really every person in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's unreal.
There's no professional actors.
Yeah.
In it. And even though people are acting,
Bayako was a character actor.
Was the only one. Oh, you could tell.
Yeah. Also, Italian director Sergio Leone is in this.
Wait, what?
He's one of the German priests.
Oh my God.
Is he really? Yes.
Oh my God.
But he's not a professional actor.
No, he's a professional filmmaker. Totally different. But yeah, we can get into some background on this now that we've gushed over it.
I love it. And one of the reasons we're covering it right now is that it is the 75th anniversary of the movie coming out.
Yeah.
And it was honored at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the first movies to be nominated for foreign language film.
Yeah.
They didn't even have a category yet.
Wow.
And it was actually honored a couple years after it came out.
Right, right.
It was either 1950 or 51.
Yeah, and this is a 1948 movie.
And so, but, you know, they wanted to honor it. 2 years previous, it was the very first award for a foreign language. And it's not like it was running against anything.
Right.
It was just given the award.
Yeah, it was just
and
honored.
The first one was De Sica's Shoeshine.
Oh, so we have De Sica to thank for kind of starting that honoring of foreign language.
Yeah, and it becomes a full-fledged category, I think, in like the mid-50s.
Yeah. Well, you know, when they were, it's funny because when people talk about this movie and the awards that it won, it, you know, was honored at the Oscars, but at mm-hmm. the time the Oscars were, they were like, I mean, but it's America. It's,
yeah.
The Oscars weren't what they are now. And right. they were, it got some other awards that were at the time much more prestigious.
Yeah.
So it was internationally acclaimed.
Yeah.
Which,
and even more so than it was acclaimed in Italy.
Yeah.
Because Italians' relationship with neorealism is complicated.
Yeah.
You know, because while it is showing their reality, they are, you know, it really fell apart as time went on because Italian politicians and things thought, mm-hmm. hey, you're really making our country look like shit.
Yeah, after we just lost a war.
Yeah. We need them tourist dollars and you're fucking it up, DeSica.
Yeah, yeah. Do not do this. Yeah, because like with Italian neorealism, it's not like it's realism and a period piece.
Right.
It is contemporary with what is going on, with how
yeah.
Italy is at the time. So it's like, this isn't painting a great picture of Italian life. Right. You know, this isn't Call Me by Your Name.
Yes.
This is like, it's like, ooh, this isn't good.
Yeah. And then the actors unions also helped end neorealism because they were like, hey, we need jobs and you keep giving it to these yeah. Unprofessional actors.
Yeah.
Well, what you are pricks. You doing here? this was obviously, we've said, directed by Vittorio De Sica. He was a matinee idol
yeah.
in Italy yeah. Through the 30s and earlier, and often was likened to the, like, he's the Italian Cary Grant. He's a very handsome dude.
Yeah, he is.
And so, you know, when he started getting into directing, it was towards the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Italy, obviously. There is a really interesting, I guess it was restored, but it hasn't been released or anything. They did a screening either late 90s or a little later than that. But it's called La Porta del Cielo, which mm-hmm. is the Gate of Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise was it's a bunch of people on a train going to get a miracle done.
Mm.
To cure them
oh.
of their ailments. So yeah. it was a bunch of disabled people as the actors.
And oh, interesting.
Essentially, it appeared to be kind of a ploy by De Sica to keep all of these people out of the hands of the Nazis and the fascists.
Oh, whoa. Huh.
And in his diary even said, the film will not be done before the Germans retreat from Rome. If they stay a year, we will film for a year. If 10 years, we will film for 10 years. And they filmed wow. it for like 2.5 years.
Wow.
It was funded by the Catholic Church, who did not like what they got from him. And so they kind of just got rid of it. And it was restored at some point in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And exhibited, but it's not, it's still not something that you can see.
Wow.
And it's still kind of considered a lost film, even though we have some element of it.
Yeah.
But that's a really interesting
thing. That is really interesting.
Thing, but
yeah. Especially, like, I mean, I think we forget how powerful the Catholic Church was. I mean, in Italy, but like yeah. we don't associate it very often with
they
the film
sort of
industry.
Want you to forget about it.
What do you mean? Why?
They still had power during the Nazi era and did what?
Oh, nothing?
Nothing.
Interesting.
Interesting.
We were victims too. No, you weren't.
I guess not in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then 1946, he does Shoeshine,
mm-hmm.
right after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first honorary best foreign language film. And then, it finally becomes a category in 1956.
Yeah. Do you know what won in 1956?
I think it was Rashomon.
Oh, I think you're right. I think it was, yeah.
But, you know, it becomes a full-fledged category from there on, mm-hmm. Which is cool. But and it's often one of the more interesting categories at the Oscars.
Sure.
You get to see five films. And the way the Oscars work too is interesting because each country has to pick a movie that they want representing them.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's interesting to see how countries are okay with being depicted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more oppressive the government is, I think the more boring the movie often is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the countries that are okay with laughing at themselves often have the best movies by far.
Right. Well, I think another reason why that tends to be a more interesting category is, you know, there's only five nominees.
Yeah.
And it's from it's essentially a pool that's huge because
And, you know, they often will pick the safer options because it's the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, the Oscars do that too.
We will be criticizing that all season. Yeah. So don't worry.
Yeah. As fun as the Oscars are, we got some issues.
They're real flawed.
Looking at the front runners this year, I'm like, well, got some opinions already.
But De Sica he continued acting in movies as he directed. He had a really bad gambling problem. And
I don't know why.
So he often had to take jobs directing that weren't really passion projects, as well as acting.
Yeah.
But he was still a good actor. He even got nominated for Best Supporting Actor in 1957.
Oh, wow.
For A Farewell to Arms. Which was a movie that nobody really liked, but they all admitted that he was great in it.
Yeah.
He got four Oscars for Best Foreign Language Film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one being Shoeshine, Bicycle Thieves. Mm-hmm. I forget what the other ones are, but they're later.
Yeah.
And, but...
You know, what's weird is, like, when we talk about Italian cinema, I think that there are a lot of... for some reason, I feel like De Sica gets left out, and I think usually because like Rossellini's
the
representative for Italian neorealism, and then we go to like Fellini and like and move forward. It's like we can only have one representative director for each movement in Italian cinema.
Yes.
So I feel like De Sica gets
that
overlooked
goes directly from Rossellini to Fellini.
Yeah. In my mind, it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, but there's like, there's so much more. But I think it's interesting because even doing research on this and kind of like, I usually try to find other podcasts to see what people are saying about it. And first of there are podcasts, but having listened to a little bit of several of them, people don't really seem to understand what makes this movie tick. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's often overlooked.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of surprised about because going into it before doing a lot of that, I was like, oh,
it's a classic.
Everybody knows Bicycle Thieves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the, like, it's always been.
I mean, it's even like, kind of a punchline of the joke in the Player.
Yeah.
By Robert Altman. It's like, it's a movie that cinephiles are supposed to love.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, I think there's a lot of contrarians who, because of that, say that they don't like it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, I fucking loved it.
Yeah. Well, we all know what word you use to shorten contrarian.
Arian.
Oh.
Arians.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
So yeah, Italian neorealism, a little bit about it, working class stories, most of all of them are shot on location. That's what makes them that way. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, they're non-professional actors. Now, one of the first ones that really makes it into the mainstream is Rome Open City, shot in 1945 in Rome about the Nazis taking over Rome. But it has Anna Magnani is one of the stars. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's got these established stars in it, but... Most of the supporting cast are just regular people, you know, and so it develops as time goes on.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
To the point that even Cesare Zavattini, who co-writes this with De Sica and works with him throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
He was one of the first to really push for this movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was even at one point going to push it even further, where he was going to make a movie about the main actor.
Yeah.
In Bicycle Thieves, about his life, and have him play himself.
Yeah.
And like, he thought that would be the next level,
right,
of,
yeah,
of neorealism.
Yeah.
And I think you do end up getting that through people like Kiarostami in Iran.
Yeah. Yeah.
Close Up, I think, is that.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it's almost even a step further than Zavattini would even do, because right, it's about them staging it.
Yes.
So it's even one step even further back.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
And even going to that, just like, you know, the evolution of neorealism, moving on from Italian neorealism,
yeah,
is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it does, it still has element. And this is, I think, what's interesting about film movements is they kind of jump to other countries and change a little bit,
yes,
like all the new,
yes,
waves that existed.
For sure.
But, you know, like, you still have the elements that exist in Italian neorealism, and see it jump to all of these,
yeah,
other countries.
Kitchen sink realism,
yeah,
cinema verite,
yeah,
we wouldn't have without,
mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm,
and direct cinema, like,
yeah,
Grey Gardens and, mm-hmm, things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have without Bicycle Thieves.
No.
Without neorealism.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it's a really interesting way to view film history.
Yeah,
is through these movements and how they jump and change in time and location.
Yeah, they often say the first, which, you know, scholars really like to do, is who was first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often agreed that Visconti's Ossessione,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
or obsession,
yeah,
is the first, followed by Rome Up and City. Sometimes De Sica's The Children Are Watching Us works its way in.
Mm.
But it's kind of the perfect storm. The war ending.
Mm-hmm.
Cinecittà Studios,
yeah, uh-huh,
was bombed during,
yeah,
World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't put back together until the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Where neorealism starts dying.
What? You mean a studio kills it?
But, you know, it's just... You also had this fascism that kind of humiliated everyone and kind,
yeah,
of forced them to be something that maybe they now realize was bullshit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's this kind of crisis of identity as well when you get beat in a war.
Right.
And your people are devastated and,
yeah,
you're probably ordered to pay the people that beat you.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting as well because, you know, when you look at, you know, Rossellini's war trilogy,
mm-hmm,
it's specifically focusing on World War II.
Yes.
And the immediate...
The fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is doing a similar thing, but you get, you really don't get mention of the war.
No.
You are really focusing,
yeah,
on how it affects the day-to-day lives of people now that it's over who aren't,
yeah,
even considering,
and like
the
war aspect is like the it's shown in objects.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the thief has a German hat on.
Right. Right. But there's no like uniformed soldiers. You don't there's really, you know, you have people who were soldiers who are looking for work, but like,
yeah,
they don't, it's not a topic of conversation. It's much more of the normal everyday fallout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of this, what it's done to the city and the people and the economy and how that shapes and changes,
yeah,
people, you know, the like the workers, the everyday people.
Yeah,
they're not heroic at all, and not that Rossellini was doing that,
right,
but like, you know, this is a different kind of Italian neorealism than Rossellini was trying to do.
It's true. This is maybe more political than Rossellini.
Yeah,
even though Rossellini's have much more political storylines,
right,
this is so much more about the working class and the lives that we are forcing them to have.
It's a different kind of political, where it's,
yeah,
it's more of a people's history than yeah. a political history.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
social history, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Cesare Zavattini is kind of the mind behind this. He met De Sica in 1935, and they made 20 films together.
Yowza. I haven't even made one with De Sica, so he's got me beat.
No, it's getting harder and harder to work with him. He keeps getting more dead.
He won't respond to my emails. I don't know.
He has a son that looks exactly like him, so he'll do.
That'll work.
Still De Sica. Their first collaboration was The Children Are Watching Us, and the idea was to show life as it is. Mm-hmm. Bicycle Thieves is based on a book.
Yeah.
Very loosely. by Luigi Bartolini, who wrote the book in 1946. Mm-hmm. His was a lot more, it's about like a middle class guy.
Right.
And he has another bike. I don't really even know what the...
Yeah.
I couldn't find it, actually. I tried to find the book.
Oh, and couldn't...
It's not in English anywhere. Ooh. Nobody's translated it from what I could find.
Yet.
But the title of this, Bicycle Thieves... there for years and years in America, it was known as the bicycle thief.
Oh.
And nobody really knows why it was mistranslated for the mm-hmm. longest time. In Italian, it's ladri di biciclette, mm-hmm. which is the bicycles thieves.
Mm-hmm.
Or thieves of bicycles.
Yes.
It's important that the title is plural.
Yes. Yes. Like immensely important.
And so, yeah, for years and years, it was called just The Bicycle Thief. And it was finally when Criterion put it out that in America it was finally...
Oh, I didn't realize that it was because Criterion corrected
it. In their release, they called it The Bicycle Thieves.
Huh.
Or maybe it's just Bicycle Thieves.
I think it's just Bicycle Thieves.
It was just a weird thing. David O. Selznick almost funded this.
What?
He saw Shoeshine.
Uh-huh.
And he thought it was really great. And he sent him a letter that it was really great. And he was like, what can we do to work together?
Mm.
And... De Sica was pretty, you know, he's like, I think I want to fund this myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was smart.
Yeah.
But O. Selznick wanted to pick the actors who would be in it.
Yeah.
You know, David O. Selznick was a very involved producer.
We've talked a little bit about O. Selznick a little bit.
The Rebecca episode was probably the biggest one. But he was very controlling.
Yeah.
He wanted Cary Grant.
Oh, the Cary Grant of... the Vittorio De Sica of America is who he wanted.
And he wanted him to be the main character, which just wouldn't work in any way, because Cary Grant, he wouldn't read as a poor man
in any situation. You know, and I don't think he has the weight of the war and poverty written on his face.
Right, because he was shooting movies then.
Yes, because he had nothing to do with any of it.
But, and then he was talking about Henry Fonda... At one point,
but he was wanting that for De Sica's.
Yes.
Yes,
and luckily, that did not happen. Good. And De Sica raised the funds himself, and it was able to do what he wanted. In America, when they brought it over, there was a production code bullshit happening where they wanted to censor the movie,
mm-hmm.
and. There's really nothing bad that happens in the movie, there is one scene where Bruno tries to pee against a wall, but doesn't, and they wanted that taken out. And then there's another scene where he chases the thief into a whorehouse.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they wanted that.
And they wanted that taken out, even though nothing happens in that either.
No, they look, they're like fully closed, just eating dinner at a table.
This was a big step in dismantling the production code in America.
Oh.
Because they then decided, they said, DeSica said, I won't. I'm not cutting that out of it.
Yeah.
Suck my balls.
How do you say that in Italian?
Suck on my balls. Swish. So they just released it to go to specific theaters. Yeah. Still was shown, and the production code was weakened once more.
Wow.
The movie is dubbed.
Yeah,
and,
it's common.
It was the way that movies were made in Italy.
Right.
And part of the reason was it was a fascist nation through the 20s into the time that synchronized sound was brought to cinemas. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, Mussolini and his fascist government actually created the kind of work, how it worked, of dubbing. And because they were a fascist nation, dubbing is really good for censorship.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to reshoot anything.
Yeah. You could just re-record it.
Just go, no, I love Mussolini. That guy must have a huge cock.
Yeah, and it's weird whenever the kid says that in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. I was like, well, is that out of nowhere?
But it is interesting, though, that the dubbing...
Yeah, it came out of...
Of oppression.
Yes, yeah.
This movie stars Lamberto Maggiorani.
Lamberto Maggiorani.
He was a factory fitter.
Yeah.
And I guess Maggiorani's wife sent in a picture of their son and him. Mm. And she wanted the son to get the Bruno role.
Oh, he didn't have the face for it.
And weren't interested, but DeSica was like, well, but who's this fella?
Hold on.
Awooga.
Hubba hubba.
So he knew that was the right face
that
he needed. And he had never acted before.
Mm-hmm.
He did act a little bit after this in a couple things, but had a pretty unsuccessful career.
Yeah.
He was fired from his factory job
after
this because they thought he was rich.
Right. And not the case.
Yeah. He did get paid well for this, but
sure.
It's but one they, job.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
The child, Bruno, is played by Enzo Staiola,
mm-hmm.
who is a very funny looking kid. And you know exactly what he'll look like as an adult.
And he does
and
look,
he does
like,
look
that.
Like that.
Yeah.
But apparently, DeSica saw him during a shoot.
Yeah.
This
is a great story.
And he was like, oh shit, that's the kid.
Follow that kid.
And so he started following this kid who like was scared.
Yeah, because...
Because there were some child murders through World War II in Italy that were... I didn't know about, but I started looking into that a little bit. But he was followed, and then the next day, DeSica held auditions in the building he saw him go into so that maybe he could get him.
Yeah.
And so he did.
Get him.
He got him. Enzo, gotcha.
but he's like, in that story, Enzo was saying like DeSica had auditioned like 5,000 kids or something, even though he knew which kid he wanted.
Yeah.
And it was Enzo.
When DeSica is known for working really well with kids.
Right.
To just get the performances he wants out of them.
Yeah. Well, and his directing style is interesting. Several people talked about how he, since they're non-actors, he will act out what he wants them to do. And he's like, just do what I did.
Yeah.
As long as you still have your face. Do your face.
Yeah.
But do and say what I do.
He preferred non-professional actors because... they wouldn't bring
all their
shit to it.
Yeah.
And he just found it easier to get what he wanted out of real people.
Yeah, you find the person that like the almost the vessel that fits the role, and then you just tell that thing what to do. It's a, I mean,
when he gave Desika gave shit, I forgot her name. Sophia Loren.
Oh, uh-huh.
He gave her first like serious role, which was like totally against type.
Yeah.
And people were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Isn't she just a sex pot?
Yeah.
Can she do a serious role? Does anybody want to see that?
Right.
And then she got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
So apparently they did.
So I guess he did a good job.
So, yeah, let's hop into this movie.
Let's do it.
Oh, wait, I do have one other thing. It's a quote that I think really sums up the attitude behind De Sica's movies.
Yeah.
So this is a quote from him. He says, "I am basically an unhappy man. Life gives me always the impression of cruelty. I read the newspaper, crimes, murders, divorces, and so on. I do not find evidence of sincerity or solidarity there. I love humanity. I trust humanity. But humanity has a way of disillusioning me. The pictures I direct are nearly always melancholy. This comes from the contrast between my love and my disillusion. I am an optimist. I love life. I seek perfection. If my art seems pessimistic, it is a consequence of my continuing optimism and its disillusion. At least I have enthusiasm. It is necessary to all professions to have enthusiasm in order to have success."
I like that.
I like it too. Because, yeah, I mean, I got a fucking degree in humanities. You know, it's studying the great things that people have done throughout history.
And they have done great things. Like, I think it is very easy to be disillusioned by the news specifically.
Oh, yeah.
And often by people. People do terrible things.
Or like driving on the highway.
Yeah, they're awful at it. Owning people are, I've found out recently, people are like terrible at owning dogs. I love dogs.
Oh, yeah.
People aren't good at, there's so many bad dog owners. It makes me so upset. But I think that it's, and I think you and I share this opinion on humanity. It's like the reason there is so much despair is because we know, we have this belief that humanity is possible, like has the ability to be so much better.
Yeah.
And the despair comes from the disappointment.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, God, come on, so guys. Frustrating. Could you just do better?
Yeah. What the fuck?
Like, yeah. And so like it's, and that's kind of what I get out of this movie specifically. It's like, there are obviously really beautiful thing. Like the city of Rome is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the love and care that the father has for the son is beautiful. And
yeah, which goes in and out too.
It does.
Like, you know, he gets frustrated or he gets, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And towards
the end of the movie, he's walking so much faster than Bruno, he's having to run to keep up with him.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just this despair taking over everything else.
Right. But yeah, so it's like, you know, there's a lot of like, and there's also a lot of comedy in this. There's parts that are very funny.
Yeah. Definitely.
Among all the just devastating parts of it.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah. So it's like
life as it is.
Yeah. This movie does, like, that quote does sum up De Sica and this movie very well.
Yeah. So we open on a very large housing complex. It's kind of this, it's right outside of the city of Rome, proper, still technically Rome, but, like right outside of it. I don't know if that's true today. It probably has been developed a little more, but it's a very big fascist level or fascist era, you know, big apartment complex.
Yeah.
Men are crowding around for, a job at the, Is it a union hall?
It seems like some sort of union hall or something.
It's through some service that they're getting these jobs.
Yeah, is it?
And they're all lined up.
Is it like the Department of Labor essentially?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, they're, but basically it's a lot of unemployed men,
and it's a lottery essentially.
Yeah,
that his name gets called.
Yeah,
Ricci. Also, something to factor in as well. The names in this, Antonio Ricci.
Yeah.
That is very much a John Smith type name in Italian.
Yeah, just very, very common.
His wife's name is Maria.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just this.
His son is Bruno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very common names at the time. Ricci would be a very common last name.
Yeah.
So the idea is that they're every people.
Yes. Yeah.
So the guy at the front, he's like chomping on a cigar, you know. And you see him later at the communist meeting,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. But his name's picked. And, you know, a guy has to come over and go, hey, aren't you listening? They're calling your name. So he runs up.
Mm-hmm.
He's told that he needs a bike. He has a job putting up posters.
Yeah.
And he's very excited. And they're saying, well, do you have a bike? And he says, well, I used to, but he had to pawn it.
Yeah. Well, he's like, I can get it back in a few days.
And yeah. And he said, no, it says it's required to have a bike. So if you don't have a bike, somebody else will get the job.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, I'll get it back. And he, you know, he runs off. And it's funny too, because as he's talking to the other guy, you can hear other men going like, I have a bike. I can do it.
Yeah. And it's weird. He's like, well, you're like, it's like, they're not. Their name isn't associated with this category of jobs or something.
Yeah, it's very, yeah.
I think it is also pointing out the absurdity of this system as well.
There's a lot of that. I feel like every shot that shows hundreds of bikes is just underlining this point that we have a system where there is enough for everyone, but because we've set up all of these other blocks, people have to starve.
Yes.
And people, you know, we've got plenty of bikes.
Oh, yeah. But you don't have a bike.
Yeah.
So you're
so
fucked.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I have a bike, but you're not in the right position. So I can't give you this job, even though you're absolutely qualified. Like, you have everything you need. It's just you're on the wrong list.
And it's a system that encourages the worst behavior.
Yeah, which we see, and I think a lot of it is it's sad to see, and it's, you know, kind of justifiable why people are like this. And there is something about this movie, and as we go on, we'll talk a little bit more about it. But there's this throughout, there's this element of loneliness and isolation, and also the kind of brewing anger that brings.
And humiliation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of it too, is you're not allowing people to have a purpose.
Right.
You know, and it's also, it's an interesting image to see a city in ruins
mm-hmm.
where there's not enough work for people.
Right. Yes.
You know, and it's like, well, this doesn't make any sense.
And it's also, it seems that there's, you know, even though the economy is, you know, downturned because it's post-war and that just happens.
Yeah.
It still seems like there's plenty of money.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's, you know, but we, it's something that we still deal with today in every country in the
world. Absolutely. Well, and I think in the situation we're in right now, there is a lot to gain by being a pretty immoral piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if your job is to just whip people into a frenzy,
mm-hmm.
you're going to make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah. That's my job, is to whip people into a frenzy. You know,
it's definitely a critique of capitalism, I'd say, mm-hmm. a big part of this movie.
Yeah.
So he goes home to talk to his wife, Maria, who's getting water.
Mm-hmm. Which is also really interesting to see, because like, that's how they get water for their home.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a pump
and they have to
outside, and then she has to carry these buckets. It's also funny that like, he's complaining about like, you know, and he's being a big baby for sure.
Yeah.
But you understand the despair, certainly. Yes. But Antonia is being very dramatic, and he's saying like, you know, I finally get a job and I can't take it. And she's like, well, what the fuck's going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
Well, what are you talking about? And he's like, I wish I was never born.
typical male behavior.
Yes.
As she's carrying two full buckets of water down a hill.
And then he like looks back and he's like, oh shit.
Oh, well, let me grab one of those.
She's like stumbling down the cell. And you know, and she's like, well, you shouldn't have sold the bike. And he's like, well, what would we even eat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so They go upstairs and Maria looks around and unlike Antonio, she wants to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so she starts getting the sheets off their bed.
Yeah.
To sell.
Yeah.
They're fine linens.
Oh, these fine linens.
And so she's saying, you can do without sheets, right?
Yeah.
And so yeah. She starts washing them and getting them ready.
It's so funny. The like Antonio is sitting there like in just utter despair. Like he just gave up already.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, there is a solution to this. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Let's go get your bike.
Well, and you
back.
Can see the despair that is kind of inherent in Antonio right at the beginning. He's laying down. He's sitting up, but he's lounging.
That sounds relaxing.
It seems desperate the way he's kind of on the sidewalk, sitting down.
Yeah,
and
just like doing.
He's almost given up on even getting a job.
Yes. Yeah.
Because of just it's implied that this has been going on a long time.
Yes. Yeah.
So they go to pawn the sheets, and also Maria, the wife, she's played by a journalist who came to interview Vittorio De Sica.
Oh.
And he was like, now you have the perfect face for this.
Hey, let me see your face.
Perfecto. But she's pawning the sheets, and she does this like thumb bite that's like so real.
Yeah,
where she's like biting her thumb, like when she hands over the sheets, she's like, "Yeah, they're really good stuff," and she's like biting her thumb, like nervous at what she can get for them.
Yeah,
it comes across as this just real mannerism that someone would have,
right? Yeah,
which is I think one of the strong suits of neorealism is you get these real people, and if it has a good director,
yeah,
they will pull those out of these.
Yes,
actors,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Which is really cool. But
and so this scene where she's trading in these linens is real sad.
Oh yeah, and she's like, they're her dowry.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're very nice linens.
And he offers 7,000 lira at first.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, could it be a little more? And he's like, well, they're used. And she's like, well, two of them are new.
Yeah.
And, this guy is just like, okay, yeah. Or 7,500. And they're like, okay, cool.
Yeah, they get it. The tragic part is like, you see at a certain point how many.
Yeah. So
linen.
there's this.
And it's a beautiful shot.
Yeah. There's this. It's when he's getting his bike back.
Right.
Somebody walks by. It's the same pawn shop, which is just like it's a window that they're at outdoors. Yeah. Also, right behind them, after they sell their sheets, there's like an old guy with binoculars. And it's just a huge line of people that are just needing to pawn stuff to live.
And you like again, the guy with the binoculars has a great face because his face reads.
Yeah,
because it's like he walks up and he's kind of looking at his binoculars, like you get, like as if this is some sort of important object to him, like a family heirloom of some kind. And it's like the situation of post-war Italy has, or the situation that it's put people in, is one of like
it's desperate.
It is putting money ahead of sentiment and humanity.
Yeah.
Because, like, yes, I have this object that means a lot to me, but I need money to live.
I have to trade this for some bread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, then you're going to eventually run out of stuff to pawn and still need bread.
Well, and that's kind of the implication, too, is that if this is happening for a long time, that old guy with his binoculars is now selling stuff that's important to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He started with the shit that maybe he could just get
rid of.
He
probably sold some linens too.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been sleeping on a linenless mattress.
He's just been sleeping on his binoculars.
Now where is he going to sleep?
Oh, no.
On his lira, because those bills are
gigantic.
So big. They're so stupid.
He's like, oh my God, is that a map?
He's like, one, two.
One, two.
They're the size of a piece of paper.
They're very big, yeah.
Like,
I mean, when you think about
how big's your wallet need to be?
It's gigantic. The biggest wallets in the world are in Italy. But like when you think about money in general, it's like they're notes.
Yeah.
And like when you think about it that way, it's like, oh, really, money is just
I promise I have this worth. Well, now it's so abstract. Like yeah. it doesn't even mean anything unless somebody says it does.
I know.
Take it to the moon doesn't mean dick.
You've been to the moon?
Once.
Oh. Was it impressive?
No.
Yeah. Never mind. Moon neorealism.
So now he goes and picks up his bike, and he's a kid with his bike again.
Yeah, it's true.
He's very excited. And this is where we get this shot of somebody walking by with their sheets.
Yeah.
And he walks up to this. It's shelves.
Just.
And he goes up to it, and you see it, and then the camera pans up. And it is.
It's got to be like 30 feet high.
At least, yeah.
It is.
With just
floor all to, sheets.
Yeah.
All
it's like, not one per fucking shelf.
Yeah. And it's.
Everyone has sold their sheets.
Yeah. I mean, and it's great because this one shot gives you so much information.
Yes.
And it's.
It's so powerful and
just
sad and.
But it's brilliant.
You know,
it's
and so you know good. That like each set of sheets has its own story.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Each one
is fucking sad.
Each set of sheets is a family in despair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That at best still has a house.
Yeah.
At worst, they're dead.
They're dead. You know. he goes to report to the job. This is the same day that he gets the bike. He goes, and it's funny because the movie is called Bicycle Thieves. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain playing that happens with this because you know this fucking bike's going to get stolen.
So anytime he sets it down,
you're like, oh, fuck.
It gives you this sense of stress and dread and anxiety where it's like, oh, my God. Even though I've seen the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's some brilliant shots, too.
Yeah.
That just show the bike by itself. And you're like, oh, fuck, it's about to get stolen. Fuck. It doesn't. Not yet. But it's funny because he walks in and he's like carrying the bike. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, hey, put that bike down. What are you worried about? And it's like, foreshadowing.
Do you know the title of this movie, man?
And so he's told he's going to be putting up movie posters.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the setting looks similar to where they were stacking the sheets, but now it's just stacks of
posters.
Of these posters, which is almost De Sica kind of saying how useless the field that he's in is.
Yeah.
That like this is the worst kind of mirror ever. That like,
right. Yeah. It's
one
it's...
is a bunch of families that don't have what they need. and then now we have just stacks of.
And somehow that is more important.
Rita
like
Hayworth.
These movie posters are more important than people's bed sheets.
Yeah. That this is an essential job right now.
Yes. And, you know, going back to the beginning, a lot of these out of work men are, you know, it's mentioned that a lot of them are like bricklayers and there's no job for bricklayers.
For a city that's in ruins.
Yes. It's just insane. Been destroyed. But there's a job for a guy to put up posters over this all over the city. It's like, what is that saying about the state of the city?
Yeah.
That they...
well, and as we go in this movie, every institution fails him.
Yes.
It's almost an odyssey of Italian institutions as he goes.
Right.
And each one fails him.
Yeah.
Including ones that he doesn't even necessarily believe in.
Yeah.
Like the church and old religion.
Yeah. Well, and even the police, you know?
Definitely the police.
Yeah.
They don't help him at all.
No.
His workers' party doesn't help him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's over and over again. He is let down by each...
Yeah, and again, this a theme of this movie is the isolation and loneliness of man.
Yeah,
when systems break down.
Yeah,
and not that they break down in this movie, but they're just useless.
Yeah,
they don't do what they say they're going to do. They don't do what they're supposed to do.
Yes, yeah, and I think yeah, the focus on even loneliness would be, you know, I think that that is, through that lens, it's a happy ending.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I do see some happiness in the ending in this.
There is.
We'll get
there,
to it.
There is, yeah. Because it yeah, yeah, we'll talk about it when we get there.
But he hears about his job, what he has to do, all that kind of stuff. And he goes outside and Maria's waiting with the bike. Or no, she's just waiting outside.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you should see it in there. And he tries to, he lifts her up to look in and they just shut the shutters in her face. And it's very much this class thing of like, well, you guys still need to know your place. Like you can work for us, but you need to know your place. Don't lift your wife up and look in here.
Right.
You're poor.
Right. But also, you know, he is so happy.
Oh, he's so happy
that he has this job. And it's like, it's, you know, he's so excited to have this pretty menial job.
Yeah. Well, and he's very excited at the possibility they have overtime, which he's very excited about.
Yeah.
They have like a family allowance.
Right.
So, you know, it's a pretty good gig for him.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it's not a high paying job by any means.
No.
But for them, but he is excited at the opportunity that this will provide him.
Well, and really, it's not just about money. In fact, it's probably not as much about money. It's about the dignity of having a job and having an identity for him.
For sure. You know? And being able to be a provider for your family.
Yeah, which is, yeah, yes, exactly. So like, he has no attachment to the job. He's not passionate about putting up movie posters. He's probably never going to go see any of these movies he's putting up posters for.
Right.
But it's about, yes, I have a job. I can provide for my family like a man is supposed to do.
And and it's a very, it's still a pretty patriarchal society.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a big part of it is the embarrassment at not being able to provide for your family.
Yes. Yeah.
But, Maria is excited that he got the job and she feels that she needs to thank this, old woman, who foretold, she's a seer and she foretold that Antonio would get a job. And so she feels she has to give her some money.
Yeah.
And so he drives her and he's not really sure what she's doing.
Yeah. She's just like,
I have to see a friend. And she goes upstairs and he stays downstairs with his bike. And these other women come in and they're like, where is the seer? And he's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, what are they doing in there?
And then he becomes curious, like, what is she doing in there?
Maria!
And so he starts going up the stairs, and there's this great shot that it does a focus pull on the bike.
As he's leaving it,
and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And he tells this little kid to watch it, and you're like, that little kid sucks.
That little kid's going to steal it. Don't trust any of them.
But... it's fine. It doesn't get stolen now.
What a relief.
But, you know, Antonio now goes upstairs and he's like, Maria. She's like, go away.
No, I don't want to.
I'm listening. And it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But he kind of drags her away because he threatens to tell her what he really thinks. I'm gonna give her a piece of my mind.
No, don't.
All right. And he calls it stupid nonsense, and he's kind of teasing her. And they go home.
Yeah.
Now it's the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
This movie takes place over 3 days.
Right.
First day he gets the job. Second day he gets his bike stolen. Third day he looks for it.
Yep.
It's the morning, and this is where we're introduced to little Bruno.
Little Bruno.
And he is in his mechanic's outfit.
It's so funny because he has an adult face.
He has an adult face and an adult job.
It's so fucking funny to see him get dropped off. I'm like,
wait, what?
This kid has a job? He's a mechanic? What?
Which also you have to think about, like, how long has Bruno had this job and how embarrassing was it for Antonio that his son had a job.
Was making money for the family.
And his son's, I don't know, 8, 9, 10? Yeah, I don't know. Less than 10.
Well, I mean, he looks like he's 35, but...
just because of the cigarettes.
And he's always talking about his pension he's going to get one day.
So straighten my pension. But both of them are getting ready for work, and Bruno is very like meticulously cleaning it, and he's like, "Oh, look, there's a bump on it. You know, there's a dent in it. They dented it." And he's like, "Well, maybe it was already there." And he's like, "No, it wasn't there. They don't take care of anything." Yeah.
Yeah. He's like doing the Italian hand gesture.
He is.
Exactly what you think it is.
This kid is so funny,
dude. He's great, and like, it's interesting watching the movie. You can watch this movie from the perspective from Antonio's perspective, and you can also watch it from Bruno's perspective, where he's watching his father like do all this stuff, and kind of the
he clearly is.
He's mimicking
his dad as his hero.
Yeah,
and he is trying to be his dad at every step of this. You know, he's dressed the same. Their mom makes these egg sandwiches in the morning.
One's a big one, one's a little one.
And you know, they both put it in their top pocket. You know, and it's just they're both trying. You know, he's definitely trying to mimic his dad.
And through the movie, he's constantly watching his dad for how he's going to react, what he's going to do. And
there's a trust there for sure.
Yeah. And what's interesting is like, you see how that kind of evolves as his father is kind of, the despair is growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a kid who idolizes his father, seeing his father not as a hero, but as a real person who goes through these down times.
Right. Right.
Is a really fascinating part of this movie as well.
Yeah. And the depths.
Yes.
That it goes. You know, he's very, Antonio is very playful with Maria in the morning, and, you know, it's kind of a headlock thing.
She's like, "Yeah, you're hurting me." I'm like, "God, just stop it."
And then they just laugh.
She's like, "You'll wake the baby." That baby is not cute.
That baby is weird. It's too small. And it's in a big dress. Yeah, it's not right.
It's way too hairy.
It's a hairy baby.
Like, I was like, "Whoa." And like they cut to the baby, I was like, "Gah!" Whoa!
And it's like a little, it's not lit quite well enough.
Right, yeah.
It's just like the dress is lit more than the baby is, so it looks like way too like dark.
It's sick.
I
can only imagine like how Jessica found that baby. He's like, "I like that baby's face." It's in the movie now.
But another important part of this scene is that we see the apartment they live in.
Right.
Which has multiple rooms. Mm-hmm. Bruno sleeps in the same room as the baby. Mm-hmm. And Antonio and Maria have their own room.
Yeah.
And then a living room.
Yeah.
We will see another apartment later on that will kind of drive this point home.
Yes.
That like, while Antonio and Maria are not having a good life, there are people who have it worse.
Yes.
Now that we have an off to work scene, and it's very lighthearted and happy. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, driving next to a bus, so it's everyone's going to work.
Yeah.
And they're on a bike, and as they're passing, you see like all the buildings lit by the morning light. And
yeah, it's very pastoral almost.
Yeah,
you know, like it's very beautiful, like morning. There's hope in the morning.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's very hopeful.
Yeah.
Bruno is dropped off at a petrol station, where he immediately grabs a big thing of gas.
Yep. "All right, gonna get to work, Dad."
"See you later." And then you have Antonio driving from the poster place, and all of the guys are driving off, and they all have ladders that they're holding,
and a can of glue,
and it's very it reminds you of like a Chaplin movie.
Yeah
riding around with their, and Chaplin was De Sica's hero. The ending of the movie is very Chaplin.
Yeah,
people walking away from the camera is how I think every Chaplin movie ends.
Yeah, there's even some scenes with Bruno where he's like sitting on a curb that's very Chaplin-esque as well.
Yeah. Bruno's movements are very Chaplin the whole time.
Yeah.
There's some really funny shit that Bruno does.
Yeah.
But a guy is teaching Antonio how to put up posters, kind of, you know, applying the glue, straightening it out.
Yeah. There's some little kids that are like around. And he just like keeps kicking them away. He's like, oh, get out of here.
Accordion kids.
Yeah. And again, their bikes are there. So it's like, man, watch those kids, dude. Like, the movie makes you very suspicious of everybody, which once the bike does get stolen, you get this feeling that he is also very distrustful of everybody after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what DeSica does is like right off the bat from like by giving you the title, it tells you what's going to happen. It already puts you in a place of like, somebody's going to steal that bike and I don't know who yet, but I don't trust any of them.
And he's going to be fucked.
Yeah. But that's like, it's, you know, it's just directed and written really well.
Because of that. You know, well, it puts to fill something that doesn't sound that serious. My bike got stolen.
Right. Right.
But then to build a context around it.
Yeah.
That really drives home that like this guy's whole life is this bike right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily the object, but what the object allows him to do.
Well, and I think it was really interesting to start the movie without him having the bike and having to get it back because he needed it.
Yeah.
So it's not like he always had it. It's like he lost it, needed it, and had to give something up to get it back.
Yeah.
And then it gets taken.
And he has nothing else to give.
Yeah.
Because he needs this job.
Yes.
Yeah. That he can't have without the bike. So now we hop to him putting up the poster on his own. It's this giant Rita Hayworth poster that must be Gilda. But the poster itself is only advertising Rita Hayworth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting. It was an Italian artist. Mm. I tried to source that specific drawing, but I couldn't find it. Mm. But yeah, he did all of the Italian stars.
Oh,
stuff. He did big paintings of them and stuff. Yeah. In that same style.
Oh, cool.
But there are these two guys watching his bike.
Yeah.
And there's one that's like hiding under, like behind a car with the German hat on.
Yep.
And then there's a guy with like a pork pie hat next to the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And It builds. It has this musical build. There is a musical score, which some neorealism doesn't dip into.
Mm.
That some will only use music in the scene.
Oh yeah.
Rather than a score or something.
Yeah.
So if there's any music, it would have to be playing on a radio in the scene.
Right.
But his bike gets stolen.
Yeah, and it's like it. He does a good job of building the tension.
Yeah.
Because it is like, you see them watching it. They walk by one time and then walk back by.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude.
Yeah.
And he's like up on the ladder.
Yes.
Because he has to put the poster higher up at this location.
Yeah.
And so like, they're watching him, not watching it. And then, they just take off with it.
And he runs off, tries to catch the guy. The pork pie hat guy's like, oh, I saw him go into the tunnel.
What a liar.
Prick. And so they follow the wrong guy. And then there's this hopeless shot of him standing, and it's a very busy area of Rome. Mm-hmm. That's very traffic heavy.
Yeah.
And so it's this small man in a giant city kind of thing.
And
you know from the shot, him finding the bike is very...
It's
unlikely.
It's pretty hopeless. And I think what it also does is his life is ruined by him getting his bike stolen and seeing all of these people who, I mean, one guy tried to help because he like jumped on his car like, go get it after him.
Well, that was the shitty guy.
No, the guy driving the car.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But like him standing in the middle of the street with so many people going by, it's like nobody was paying attention. Yeah. Nobody's paying
life
attention.
Life goes on, man.
Yeah. Everybody has their own thing, but he's like, it's, you know, everybody moves on, but he
can't. Well, and driving that home, he then goes to the police station where it's not really taken that seriously. And he's, you know, it's like, he's like, well, are you going to find it? And the police officer saying, or detective or something, he says, look yourself if you have time.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't look in all of Rome. And he's like, well, it would take a lot of cops to look for it. And you know what it looks like. So he says, well, what's the point of me even doing this? Yeah. And he says, well, if you go out and find it, we've got the record that it's stolen.
Yeah, we've got the serial number. We'll know if it's your bike because you gave us that. But like, that's it.
But the best part is this journalist comes in to ask the cop, anything serious? And the cop goes, no, it's just a bike. And it's such a like an underscoring of how hopeless this is going to be.
Yeah.
Because, it's just a bike.
Right.
But what it means to Antonio is his entire fucking world.
Yes. Yeah.
But he has to then catch the bus to go pick up Bruno, who's just waiting at the gas station for his dad.
Yeah, he's like, it's 7:30. What are you doing?
And it's great, too, because Bruno does these really quick turnarounds.
Yeah.
When he sees his dad.
Yep.
Those are the kind of chaplain moves, I think.
Yes, yeah.
They walk home very quietly. Bruno's saying, what happened to the bike? And he's saying, oh, it broke. And Bruno goes in to the apartment, but Antonio doesn't. And he goes down to his local communist chapter.
Yeah.
As he walks in, he sees the people kind of speechifying in a small group, talking about what they need to do.
Without it, like, actually helping anybody?
Yeah. You know? And then on the other side of it, and it's like this underground area, and on the other side of it, they're practicing a play.
Yeah.
Which is very much this idea of, like, bread and circuses.
Yes.
That, you know, we have to provide both, and that will allow you to
appease the people.
Yes. And you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You give them bread and circuses. But he's there to see his friend Bayako.
Yeah.
Who is kind of a higher up communist.
Yeah.
And he thinks he'll help him try to find the bike. Uh-huh. He does help him, but not really.
Right.
It's funny too, as he's waiting for Bayako, who's up there practicing the play or the musical or whatever. A guy comes in and he's like, hey, Richie, I'm stealing your job. And he's like pasting a poster up. And Richie's like, oh, yeah.
I'm going to fucking kill you.
Fuck you, man. So he gets Bayako to agree to go to the market with him in the morning to find it. At this point, Maria shows up and she's devastated. She's heard he doesn't have the bike anymore.
Yeah.
And it's this, you know, it's sad. It's the last we see of Maria.
It is.
And then it's funny because then that's interrupted by the sides of the communist clashing. So it's like, hey, you can't do this in here. We're practicing. They're like, you don't need to be doing that. You know, it's every political group ever.
Yes.
The next morning, Bayako and crew go to try to find the bike. They say it'll be in pieces.
Yeah. And they're also like saying it. They're like, don't worry, we'll find it. We're going to find it. Don't worry about it. You're going to sleep bad tonight, but tomorrow it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Giving them all this hope.
In the morning they're like, okay, it'll be in pieces because they know that
they're gonna take it apart. So you try to find pumps, you try to find bells,
you look at wheels, you look for frames.
Yeah.
And they go to this market.
Mm-hmm. And there's a tracking shot of bikes, which is so much that idea of there's plenty of bikes.
So it does two things. It does that. It's like, oh, there's plenty. Like, there's bikes are so readily available.
Yeah.
But also the hopelessness of trying to find his bike.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's anxiety. It's like, oh my God.
You know, right then it's not going to happen.
And this isn't the only market that it could be at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just, it is so seemingly hopeless,
yeah,
that they're actually going to do that. Like, find
when they come across this total douche who's painting the bike.
Yeah,
he seems really German.
Yeah, I was like, that guy. There's no way that guy's Italian.
But or like Russian. He's very intense.
He looks very Aryan.
But he's painting a bike, and they're like, "Hey, well, what's the serial number on that?" And he's like, "Why, you collecting serial numbers?" And they're "No, we just want to see it." And it's really funny too, because they're like saying, and then out of nowhere, the guy's wife comes out.
Yeah, she's firecracker,
and she's like immediately at 10. Like, there's no ramp up.
Yeah,
she jumps out and she's like, "We don't ask you for the size of your shoes. Why do you think you can come in here and ask us the serial numbers?"
Oh, hey, lady, I know you're being mad at me right now, but there's something going on. Or like, what's really the problem?
A cop comes over,
yeah,
to solve this situation, and they look. He reads out the serial number. It's not his fucking
bike,
and the guy's all shitty about it.
We don't steal anything over here. Ah,
we're an honest business, whatever.
I love when he goes, it's like somebody goes, yeah. And then he goes, back at him.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's so good. Yeah, there are.
Those are quotes. That wasn't me faking Italian. Those are actually the noises they made.
Yeah, they weren't saying anything Italian.
And then they're like, "Oh, where's Bruno?" Bruno's being hit on,
yeah,
by this grown-up.
He's like, "Oh, you like this bell? It's nice. I'll buy it for you."
I wasn't sure what the point of that was,
it seemed kind of out of place.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I think to a certain extent, it is just showing you that the upper classes are these immoral people.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's also making note of like some of those child murders.
Yeah.
That were happening, during the war or something. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's weird too, because in Germany Year Zero,
mm-hmm.
Roberto Rossellini's German war trilogy there's also a pedophile in that's like trying to pick up on the kid.
Huh.
So it was a theme. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
it happens in this, and it's very uncomfortable.
It
like,
is.
It's like, leave this kid alone, dude. And he's not being subtle about it.
This bell? Yeah.
And maybe it's also saying something about how people aren't willing to help when somebody's obviously in trouble, because there's plenty of people around.
Yeah.
He's not hiding the fact that he's trying to get this
kid. That guy has money.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People who have money are the ones who are fucking kids.
I know.
At least that's not how things are now.
Clearly. Thank God we're past that.
They leave to the Porta Portese market, because mm-hmm. it's clearly not there at this market.
Yeah.
This is when it rains. This was the most expensive scene in the movie, because they had to get the fire department to make it rain.
Yeah.
Make it rain.
I was waiting for that.
And it's, right as they get there, it starts raining. So the market's like packing up.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of chaos.
Yeah.
There's no easy way to search for anything at that point. And he's, he's kind of trying to look around, but then they run for cover, which is, there's something magical about the scene to me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these moments in this movie that like really stick with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're simple as hell, but like this is one of them where it shows everyone running to stand not underneath something, but like as close to this wall as possible.
Right.
So they get less wet.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a guy running by and somebody's like, "What, are you afraid of the rain?" And he's like, "No, I'm afraid of getting my hat and tails wet." And so, like, there's these weird jokes, too, that, like, aren't in the translation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That are interesting. But
right.
Well,
I think, another interesting aspect of this movie that this scene brings up is, we've talked about the realism that actually shooting in Rome at the time mm-hmm. brings. And, you know, there's so many different versions of Rome that you see. This location looks completely different than the other market.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks completely different than the communist hall that they're meeting.
Yeah.
It's like, so there's, and I can't remember, there's a third screenwriter and I can't remember her name.
Yes.
But she was like, what I think this film is doing really well is like, there are like dozens of Romes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That exist. And this movie depicts a lot of them. And I think that this scene sticks because I visually, for whatever reason, I think it's because of the texture of the rain and the movement of the people that are running the market and things like that. But it's just so rich visually.
Yeah.
That it just like really sticks out.
Yeah.
And you do see a lot of different aspects of Italian life in this, because mm-hmm. you do have the people in the market and you have the rich and the poor, and you even have like the clergy
of priests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As they're running for cover, Bruno falls in that puddle and he gets all wet. And then it's funny because they get to the wall. Antonio hasn't seen Bruno fall at all. And he's like kind of wiping himself with his handkerchief.
And Bruno.
And then he looks at Bruno. He's like, what happened?
Bruno's like slapping his clothes to get everything off.
Yeah.
Which also I think is interesting because it's an aspect, because it's like, oh, just you're not. Just wipe off a little bit, but he's really trying to get everything off. And it gives this idea of like, that's probably the only, like one of the only sets of clothes that he has.
Yeah.
Same with Antonio, is like, they don't have a lot at this point. So what they have to protect. It's just like his bike. Like if he rips his pants, it's like, oh, that's his only fucking pair of pants.
Right. Right.
You know, and you're not going to get a job with ripped pants. Like it's just, there's that, like items are so precious.
If you had an extra pair of pants, they'd have pawned them.
Exactly. And they probably did.
Yeah.
They probably have pawned a lot of clothes.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So like, you know, I was watching it and I was like, little kid, your clothes are dirty. It's fine. But then I was like, oh, well shit, this is probably the only clothes he has.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because his mannerisms here are so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls and then Antonio sees him. He goes, what happened? And he like gestures angrily at the puddle. He's like, I fell down!
Fell down in the fucking puddle, Dad!
He's all mad.
Bruno gets mad so hilariously.
He does.
I laughed every time he got mad.
Yes.
And it's his
face
is funny,
and his gestures.
But then, as the movie goes on, he doesn't get mad anymore. He just gets sad.
Yeah.
And that,
that's true.
And that is like, you know, I think it just tells so much about their predicament in their life and how Bruno is growing up a lot in a day. This day is transformative, truly transformative to him.
At this point, all these German priests come in and they're like standing really close to them.
Yeah.
And as I said before, one of these priests, one with the glasses on right next to them, is Sergio Leone.
It's crazy.
Who was a production assistant on this, one of his first things. And he won't direct a movie until, I think, 61. He's got a long time to still work.
Yeah.
Because he also, I believe, worked with Fellini as well.
Okay.
You know, it was a smaller world.
Sure.
Then. But the rain stops and people immediately start just walking back to where they were.
Mm-hmm.
They see the thief just happen to.
Yeah.
They see a thief talking to this old man.
Yeah.
Who also has a great face.
Oh, yeah.
And they chase after the thief who bikes away from them.
And they can't.
This is
one of those situations where Antonio is running and not really considering where Bruno is. And Bruno's just trying to keep up. So there's like this abandonment that keeps happening with Bruno.
Yes. Yeah. And then they decide to chase after the old man to try to find this kid.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to find him. And this is where we kind of get the twisty streets of Rome.
Labyrinthine.
Being in an ancient city,
Yeah.
It's got a lot of these weird little areas.
Right.
And, you know, these piazzas and stuff that aren't really a grid.
No.
So they're chasing after him. And then this is where Bruno attempts to pee. And then Antonio's like, Bruno! And he does like a whole body turnaround, which is really funny.
Yeah.
And then just keeps running. They meet up with the old man who just plays dumb.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Leave me alone.
Yeah, everybody's real shifty in this movie.
And they follow the old man into a church. This is Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do get a lot of Sunday lunches happening in this movie, as well as this church service that they kind of crash.
Right.
There's also this aspect of generations with them. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you kind of have, you have Bruno, Antonio, and this old man.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this is going to happen to you.
Right.
Is a fear for Antonio is that he sees this old man as maybe his future.
Because we get this idea that everybody that's going to this service is homeless.
Yes. It's this kind of talking down.
Yeah.
Service and the guy, there's a man cutting hair
and shaving
who's a lawyer, and so the idea is that it would be his weekly service.
Yeah
And he's kind of shitty, and they're all calling him like magister or something.
Yeah.
And but the church got mad at this scene because they were like, I feel like you're making fun of us.
Well,
oh, what? That's crazy, man.
Oh man, what do you?
I love what you guys do, but they're very like this. You have to do this to get the food.
This reminded me very much of the opening to Tokyo Godfathers.
Yes,
where you have to sit through the service to get the food.
Absolutely, and it's shot similarly. I would be surprised if that wasn't an influence.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it could have been. Yeah. But like, yeah, he's,
and it's also these clearly upper class people who are running it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Sir. They're kind of shuttled into the church and they're watching this old man and they're like, please, we need your help. Like, and he's saying he's not in trouble. He's a friend and he has something to give him.
Yeah.
But the guy's really not budging.
No.
And
Antonio's very persistent.
Oh, he is. He's not very good at it, though.
No.
He's pretty bad in these circles. He's clearly out of his element. And he doesn't really know how to talk his way into situations at all.
Right.
He's terrible at that.
Yeah.
He's saying he has something important to give this guy.
Yeah.
And they keep getting shushed in the church. Because Antonio's like, oh, hey, and you know, it's he's trying to get him to go with him,
right? And yeah, because he finally
gives him an address, but you're pretty certain it's not real.
Yeah, and that's when he's trying to get the old man to go. Yeah. He's like, well, you're gonna come with me. He's like, no, I'm not going anywhere.
And so it kind of creates a disturbance, which then he's like, well, let me get my soup first, and he goes, but then the old man escapes, and there's kind of this. It's a pretty exciting little chase through the church.
It is. I was like, well, how big is this place? There's so many little corners.
It's one of the oldest churches in Rome.
Is it?
That they shot that in. Yeah.
It's very, like, it's cool. It's also really interesting to see a mass at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's pre-Vatican II. And like, so it's still... There's imagery that, you know, having like grown up Catholic that I was like... Not that I ever went to mass pre-Vatican II, but like, but I was like, oh my God, this is how my dad used to describe church, like in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With, it was just really fascinating to see that as well. And also hearing Latin.
Yeah.
Like the Latin mass and all this stuff. And I was like, ooh, this is fun.
Yeah, that was lost on me.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, you missed out because it's my favorite part of the movie.
So there's kind of this chase. They're kind of grabbed, you know, different times.
Right.
And, it's funny because they grab him and then it's time to pray. Yeah. And so they all kneel down and then he like runs off.
Yeah.
And I was out loud. I went, their one weakness, prayer.
And then Bruno stops and kneels too. He's like, do I need to?
Which is a good bit.
Yeah.
And it's also this interesting thing that like Antonio in this is like really a pretty modern man.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't believe in religion.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe in like the...
these systems that are supposed to have authority.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? He doesn't seem to have any space in his life for that. He is, you know, in a way, this one-dimensional worker.
Right. Well, and I think also, you know, going through a situation like he's probably been through, being out of work, being in poverty more or less, having probably been in the war.
Yeah.
That kind of like disillusions a lot of these authoritarian organizations and agencies. So it's like,
and you can tell that like Antonio would just be a soldier.
Yes.
He wouldn't be a fascist.
Right.
You know, politically.
Yeah.
He got conscripted to go to war.
Yes.
And he went to war.
Yes. Yeah. He doesn't have time or energy to be focused on any kind of ideological thing, whatever it is.
Which also would factor in as well to his relationship with Bruno and why Bruno idolizes him so much, because for a big part of his life, Bruno would be the man of the house.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, trying to emulate his father,
right,
who was absent fighting in the war.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is also like very much De Sica's voice, because like he was always surrounded by like artists and intellectuals who were also of that idea of like in a different way, where the intellectuals were like, this is, I can see the brokenness of these. I can see how these don't really have the authority or do what they say they're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't believe them in them because of that. Where Antonio is speaking for kind of more the like everyday blue collar worker kind of version of that, which is very modern, because I think usually when you think of blue collar, like especially here in America, very religious, very obsessed with political identity and religious identity.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just interesting how those play out in different ways and how they're shown, and especially in this movie, which I agree with much more than what we have here.
This is also a scene where Bruno gets slapped by a priest on the top of the head.
He gets bopped.
He opens the curtain and there's a priest in there and he hits him on the... And then, so Bruno gets slapped twice in like a 10-minute period.
Yeah.
They're chasing after the guy. And they finally are outside of the church, and they've lost him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Bruno says, why'd you let him go to lunch? Like, why'd you let him go?
Mm-hmm.
And out of frustration, Antonio hits him.
Yeah.
He slaps him really hard across the face.
Yeah.
Which, like, immediately...
That destroys Bruno.
And Antonio. Like, there's a face that Antonio makes right after he does it of, like, oh, shit.
Like, ooh, it's like, oh my God, what did I do?
Yeah. But then like he can't say that either. So he's like, some son I have, you know.
Yeah.
But his face falls when he does it.
You know?
Like you see it.
Yeah.
And Bruno cries. And I also really like this image, but it's this where they're walking and they're walking like, you know, 10
pretty
feet
far
apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just love that. Like it's, they're going the same direction, but they're mad right now.
Right. Yeah.
And they slowly, you know, reunite. But he wants to see if he can see the old man from a better vantage point from this bridge. So he tells Bruno to wait by the bridge while he tries to see the old man. And he's like looking, and then he hears a bunch of people yelling that a boy has just fallen in from the bridge.
Yeah.
And he starts going towards there, and then he starts shouting Bruno.
Yeah.
Because he's certain that Bruno's just fallen or jumped in. And he's running for him. Luckily, it's not Bruno.
Yeah, thank God. This movie is devastating enough.
I know.
Couldn't handle that.
And there is that moment of, oh, it's not my kid.
Yeah, well, and it's that, and it's also like reminding him of why he's doing any of this. He's like, oh, it's not about the bike. It's not about the job. It's about his family and
which
his
leads
son.
To the best scene in cinema.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Where they're walking, and it's still like tense. They're less far apart.
Yeah.
But he says to Bruno, like, oh, I bet, you know, are you hungry?
Yeah.
You know, how about a pizza? And Bruno kind of smiles, which is like just so sweet.
Yeah.
And so they work their way into a little restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I love that the thing that it's so simple, seemingly, where it's like just the worst day of their lives.
Yeah.
But pizza fixes it.
Well, and it's kind of this, we're done for.
It's like this is what we live for. Like this is these are the things that we have bikes for and we have jobs for. It's so we can enjoy life.
And there is a struggle to enjoy it a little bit.
There is, yeah.
So they go in and immediately they're kind of outsiders.
Yeah.
He orders a pizza and the guy's like, "It's a trattoria, not a pizzeria."
You son of a bitch.
Fuck you.
Just give me a fucking pizza.
And Antonio says, "Let's forget everything and get drunk."
Yeah, to Bruno.
To Bruno. So he orders a full bottle of wine.
Uh-huh.
And mozzarella carrozza.
Yeah. In the Criterion disc, the translation is a mozzarella sandwich, which already sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But when they bring it out, I was like, that's what not is a this? Sandwich. What's going on? But what's interesting like is that Bruno kind of looks and there's another family and there's another kid that's eating it. That's eating the same thing. And Antonio sees Bruno looking at him. He's like, oh, let's get what that family's getting. Like, I want you to enjoy this the same as them. We're like, he's trying to equalize in some way and memorialize.
You do get these visual images that they are out of place as well, where, you know, they try to eat this with a knife and fork, which both are incredibly clumsy.
Bruno
with.
Seemingly has never seen them before.
Yes.
I was watching, I was like, just pick it up, dude. This is so frustrating watching you try to use these utensils.
But, you know, and there's also this lively music playing, which is cool. It's a weird song from Naples. It's a Neapolitan song that is about a woman who has been fucking a bunch of American GIs.
Yep.
And then is shocked when her baby comes out black.
Yeah. I was like looking at the captions for it. I was like,
what?
Oh. All right. I guess that's what you're
saying.
And it
gives you like one line in the thing, but on, there was a commentary on the Arrow.
Oh, uh-huh.
Blu-ray. Yeah. And it was a guy who spoke Italian, and so he gave a lot of, lot more information on that. But yeah, it's apparently this woman who's been fucking some GIs and has a black baby. I'm sure it's very racist.
Clearly, yeah.
So they're kind of looking back at, or Bruno is, he's looking back at this table and it's this very shitty rich kid.
Yeah, this kid's a piece of shit.
And I think it's a boy. Weird hairdo, but top knot thing.
It's what rich boys wore at the time.
Bruno's just eating this and it's a mozzarella carrozza.
Yes. Which
is a fried mozzarella sandwich type thing.
Yeah.
That just sounds incredible.
It sounds incredible. It had a little slice of lemon to flavor it a little bit. I was like, oh.
and it's just this crispy cheese sandwich.
Yeah. And then they bring this carafe of wine.
Yeah.
Which is clearly like the house wine.
Yes.
And at first, you know, to emphasize the expectations that the wait staff and the restaurant owners have of these two clearly poorer people that have walked in, the waiter is also like, because he asks for wine. He's like, oh, a half bottle?
Yeah. Yes.
A full one, thank you.
You prick. I'm spending the rest of my money.
This is all the money I have. Give me a full bottle, baby.
And the family behind them is then they get like another course, and each of them gets a plate. And there's kind of this, you know, looking, and Antonio finally sees Bruno looking at them, and he says, well, to eat like them, we'd have to make over $1 million a month.
And Bruno looks at his food like, oh my God, I shouldn't be eating this.
Yeah.
This is too expensive.
And Antonio has to go, no, eat, come on.
Yeah. And then he smiles again and eats it.
Yeah.
It's really sweet.
It's so sweet.
Like,
and you know, he's smiling at the song, and you know, this is for Bruno.
It is, yeah.
And Antonio can't help but feel depressed as well, and he actually starts calculating how much money they would have made.
Don't do that, man. Don't do that to yourself.
And you know, he's like, not even the saints will save us. And then you kind of see him remember the seer from earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they head that way. And this is another one of those funny scenes.
Yes.
Where we get this weird looking guy talking to her, and she's like, you have to sow your seeds in another field. And he's like,
What?
What do you mean? And she's like, do you not understand what I'm saying? And he's like, not a word.
He's like looking around like,
She's like, you're a very ugly man.
Oh.
She doesn't love you. You need to find another woman.
She's like, this motherfucker needs me to spell it out. All right, here we go. Okay, you're ugly, dude.
So he's done, gives her some money, and Bruno cuts.
I laughed so hard at that scene, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's very it's like funny.
It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Got a great face for it, too. He's got a good dumb face.
He looks very stupid. Bruno cuts, and Antonio's embarrassed, but goes along with it.
Yeah.
People are mad, but she does the reading, and he's kind of embarrassed to say what the problem is. He's like, well, I lost my bike. And she's like, what?
You lost your what?
my bicycle. Oh, well, either you'll find it now or never.
Or never. What? What does that mean?
So, no fucking help at all.
Seemingly, but then... He still pays her.
Yeah.
And that is like the last of his money.
Yeah.
And I do have, this is a weird part because she says that you'll either find it now or you'll never find it.
Yeah.
Which confuses him. And then when he walks out, he sees that guy who stole his bike. He's like right outside, and he's like, oh, and like, as I'm watching it, it's like, what is DeSica trying to say with this?
And that I think he runs into the guy again?
And I think that it is more clear that it's not that this seer knew what she was talking about. Yeah. It was just coincidence.
Yeah.
But like, especially
I think it's even a coincidence that makes sense, as far as this is also the urban area of Rome where people have to get creative on how they make money.
Yes. No, I think it's also saying that. Absolutely.
You know,
like everybody is just trying
birds
to...
Birds of a feather, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So this seer would live next to the bicycle thief because they're all scammers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it as it goes on, it's like, oh, okay, I see.
I do like that, like, he takes the money out, Bruno grabs it, and he tries to give it to the seer, who won't take the money, but the woman sitting next to her will. And it's like, fuck off.
Yeah. No, that's
not above money. You're taking it anyways.
Yeah. You're going to use the money.
You liar. But yeah, they see the thief who like sees them, and he's got a very memorable face as well.
He's also got a really shitty face.
Yeah. Fucker.
You look like a thief.
So, as he turns the corner, you can see him start running.
Yeah.
And they chase him into a brothel.
Yeah.
Or a brothel.
Either one.
Bravo.
And, you know, they chase him in and, you know, Bruno doesn't get in, but Antonio chases him. And then it's like this image of all of these prostitutes sitting at the table with him, with the thief at one end and Antonio at the other end of the table.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is like having a brothel be right. Like this is the part of town where it's the more seedy part of town. So again, it is emphasizing why that the con artist seer is there and the guy who stole the bike and a brothel. And they know it seems like they know the guy.
Yes.
Because everybody in that part of town
definitely
sticks together, we find out.
Yeah. Oh, and it's definitely supposed to be a seedy part of town. I do have to say prostitution was legal at the time.
Sure.
But yes, it is a seedy part of town.
But so is seer seeking.
Sure. Yeah. the guy's claiming he didn't steal anything.
Yeah.
We saw him steal it. We know it was him. As they go outside, he is kind of pushing him up against a wall. Antonio is.
Yeah.
And people from the neighborhood start gathering around him.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, this guy with sunglasses on, looks like from a totally different movie.
Yeah.
These two gangsters walk up. They're like, what's going on here? Bruno runs to get the cops.
Yeah.
Because Bruno is smart.
Yep.
You see the guy with the pork pie hat come out holding a baby.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, shit. He just goes back inside.
Uh-oh.
But you do get kind of confirmation that
these
guys work together to steal stuff.
And they probably steal stuff for the guys in sunglasses.
Yes. Yes. the thief's mom pops up a window upstairs.
Yeah.
And she's,
my boy, my boy.
He would never do this. He's a sweet baby angel.
And all of a sudden, the thief, I would say, fakes a seizure.
Yes.
And
he does it really well, but, he probably has done it before.
And the mom's all hysterical going make sure nobody doesn't hit his head.
Yeah.
And they're cornering
Antonio,
and they're all kind of crowding around him, and he has to take this piece of wood.
He's like, ah,
and he's
back.
Swinging it at him.
Yeah.
And then this guy up in a window throws a pot of water, and everyone's like, hey! And then the guy's like, I was just trying to cool him off. And they're like, ah! It's a real good neighborhood.
Yeah. Just real sweet people.
Finally, the cop arrives, and everyone's like, oh, shit.
Oh. Everybody, cool.
And they get to search the apartment.
Yeah.
This is where we see the thief's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in one room.
Yep.
With his mom and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And the kitchen's in there. And
it's a one-room apartment that four people live in.
And she's like, look under the bed. There's no space for a bicycle.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, Antonio knows already that it's not going to be in there because he knows that it's probably already been sold for parts.
Yeah. Yes.
He knows this is, and it's probably why he didn't get the cops in the first place, but Bruno did.
Bruno. Snitch Central over here.
He's like, hey, Bruno. Snitches get what now?
But the mom's saying, you should give him a job instead of harassing him like this. He's been looking for a job forever. He asks the mom to leave them. Mm-hmm. And basically the cop's like, look, do you have another person who saw him?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I did. And he's like, well, they're all going to say he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So you need something concrete.
Which is interesting because he knows, hey, you know that these people are going to back this. There's nobody here is going to say that he stole it.
Basically, I'm powerless to help you.
Yeah. It's weird because this cop is seemingly kind of trying to help him out.
He's the most helpful cop in this movie.
Yeah. And still not
and
super
still
helpful.
Does nothing for him.
Yeah. He's he admits, he's like, I can't do anything for you.
Yeah.
But if we find out he didn't steal the bike, if we ask them and they say he didn't, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because you caused him to go into this seizure and harassed him.
Yeah.
And so drop it.
Yeah. Yep. And Antonio leaves. And Bruno at first is like standing with the mob.
Yeah, he doesn't want to go.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
And he, well, and he's then he seen calls
this,
Bruno.
Yeah, he's seen this change in his dad throughout the day.
And, yeah, and a group of people angry at his dad, which is hard for him to see. You can tell.
Yeah.
It's a real mood killer.
You're telling me.
And so Antonio starts walking faster than Bruno, who's like just trying to catch up, and Bruno almost gets hit by two cars.
Yeah.
I saw something that said that wasn't planned, but I can't imagine that situation. So
no, that
I mean that is bullshit.
I've heard a lot of stuff about this movie with like how things were shot and how things weren't planned, and they just like,
it was a very planned movie.
Yes. If you
and
see
it's more
any,
expensive than you'd think it would be.
Yeah. If you see any like behind the scenes photos or anything, it's like, there's no way people driving around didn't know that this was a movie being shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, oh, they filmed everywhere without permits. I was like,
no, that is
true. Right. Yeah. I was like, there's no way this was a big production.
Definitely.
There's so many rumors that aren't true. Couldn't be true.
Soccer stadium time. It's full of people. You get hints at the soccer game throughout the movie. There's a car that drives by that's like chanting for a team. Yeah. And it's almost this aspect of like, this could be something that the father and son bond over, but it isn't. Because Antonio then asks Bruno, is that a good team?
Right.
You know, and so like another thing that Antonio is not interested in.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's also not work.
You also hear this like news update on
the
soccer league in Italy.
Yes.
At the time. And it's like, what is.
And when he goes up to the seer, you hear it on the radio.
Right. Right.
But at this point, you know, you hear all the fans screaming. It's towards the end of the game. He looks and he sees just a ton of bikes sitting there.
It was everywhere.
I wish he would have stolen one of those.
It would have been smarter. You just walk up and take it.
Yeah, just with confidence.
What are the odds?
And then if somebody goes, hey, that was my bike, you go, oh shit, sorry.
I thought this was mine. Oh, mine's right here. Then take that one. Yeah. Hey, wait, that's my bike.
Oh, man. Which one is mine?
I just
play dumb.
Does anybody know if this is their bike? Okay, that one's
mine. That one's mine. But there's a ton of bikes, and there's one bike in an alley. The editing in this is pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's really good because you don't notice how wild it is.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you like really look at it, it's got like 100 cuts.
It's got a lot of cuts and
it's just this, all this tensions being built.
That's what I was going to say.
And the bike's like, riding by and shit. Like,
yeah.
It's really,
because the soccer crowd starts to let out.
Yeah.
And you see all these people like getting on their bikes and going. And I think he's starting to think, I'm like, okay, if I take that, I can maybe just like blend in with the crowd. And again, not at all thinking about Bruno.
Yes.
Oh, no. He tells Bruno to get on the bus and thinks it is, and Bruno misses the bus.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know that Bruno is watching.
Yeah.
Because this is the most shameful thing he could ever think
of
doing.
Oh, boy.
And it is devastating. I like was watching this, and I've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
I know what happens.
Yeah.
I was like watching it with my hand over my eyes, where I was like, oh, no, God.
There is an interesting framing as well as he steals the bike, because there's this big pole in the middle of the frame, and he starts on one side of it, and it's almost this like, okay, I'm going to cross this line.
Mm. Oh, shit, yeah.
And he picks up the bike, and immediately someone comes out, chases him. It's this shot where he's being chased by all these people.
Ugh. So stressful.
And there's this shot of Bruno standing on the corner, and he hears all these people coming. And then it's this kind of tracking shot that tracks Bruno's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And his face is just fucking perfect. And he's shocked.
Yeah.
Like, that's my dad, the mm-hmm. fuck? And they catch him mm-hmm. and they're hitting him and talking about what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah.
And Bruno comes in and he's crying.
Papa, papa. It's devastating.
And they're going to take Antonio to the police station, and the guy who owns the bike sees Bruno yeah. and he sees Antonio humiliated. And the guy's like, eh, just forget it. Let him go.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, a few more people get in some jabs at the end of, yeah. You know, the last guy who speaks in the movie is like, it's such a funny cadence that he has. Cause he's like, ba, ba, ba.
Kind of trails off.
And,
but I think, you know, like the guy who decides to not press charges.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he decides to not press charges because I mean, he sees Bruno. He's like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
This is already the worst
yep.
thing. He's got to live with his son knowing he tried to steal yeah, this bike.
This is much more of a punishment than
yeah
anything. That and it's almost anybody else could
and
do.
It's almost more insulting to like be like, nah, I don't care. I don't need to send you. I'm good.
I don't think I took it that way.
Oh no no. But one could. Like his lack of
what a
care.
Dick.
Like his, yeah. Because I don't think that Antonio would have done that had he caught the guy who stole his bike.
That's true.
He would have pressed charges.
Yes.
So there is like this.
That's interesting.
And what I really think is that we get a little bit of humanity from this guy.
Yes.
Than Antonio would have had. So like.
I think that's true.
Our
yeah.
protagonist is not a hero at
no.
all.
No.
And he's shown that throughout the
just
movie.
Just a guy.
And he's equal, like even the guys who stole his bike, he's equal with them now, but also like you have this understanding, like in Antonio and Bruno both see it without admitting it, that it's understandable why they would steal the bike. They yeah. are worse off than they are.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. That's. God, it's just...
And this situation has created a bicycle thief out of him.
Yeah, and I think that's why like the title is like so interesting, why they like call it Bicycle Thieves is like... it's
It has to be plural.
Yes, yeah. because he became one of the bicycle thieves.
Yeah.
And it's like, ugh.
And the last shots are the two of them walking down the street, and Bruno looks up, and his dad's got tears rolling down his face, and mm-hmm. Bruno grabs his hand. And they walk off.
And I think what this does is, and why I kind of watched it this time, again, through Bruno's perspective.
Yeah.
Is he, so much of the character development in this movie is not Antonio, it's Bruno.
Yeah.
Because he learns that he needs to console his dad. And right. I think that's kind of what he's doing at the end, because he takes his dad's hand.
Yes.
When he sees him cry. He's like, oh, I need to be the one to take care of my dad.
Yeah. And well, he does have that nice mechanics job.
Don't worry, Dad. I got us. I'll take care of us. I'm about to get my pension in 5 years. How long have you been working there? A while.
But I also just, the hand grab is, I love it.
Oh, it is
a happy ending.
It's
to me.
Hopeful in a way because
they will have each other.
Again, like this is, I think a lot of this can be seen partly as Bruno's story.
Oh, definitely.
And it's him growing and comforting.
Well, in this era of De Sica is very like focusing on the kids.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and the children are watching us, as, you know.
Right. Yeah, and we
his
see
first
this.
Movie, and yeah. it's about how we are affecting our children.
Yeah,
with what we do,
and I think that's very much what this movie is about.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Bruno learns that he, first of all, a cautionary tale in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and has learned that
get a bike lock.
Dude, when were bike locks invented? Because I was like,
was funded by the bike lock lobby. Big bike lock.
I'm It's like a big bike lock telling me what to do with my bike. Well, here's why. Anyways, yeah. So I do kind of view that as sad as it is, because he doesn't get his bike back. He's right where back where he started.
Yeah.
Bruno's not. Bruno's grown. He's changed.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. He's had to grow up a lot on that Sunday.
Yeah. And so I think it is kind of a oddly like happy ending.
Yeah.
I think you're right. As sad as it is.
As sad as it is.
Yeah.
So the reception of this, Italians weren't big fans. I mean, I think that there was a certain pride that their movies were seen well on an international stage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we were talking earlier about kind of the image of Italy being shown, mm-hmm. it was embarrassing for a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, I think it comes from this place of kind of a leftist critique mm-hmm. to what a country that fell into right wingism.
Yes. Yeah.
What happened and the fallout. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of those everyday people that it's kind of about mm-hmm. didn't take it well.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
On the international stage, immediately, this is something special.
Yeah.
It won the Academy Honorary Award in 1950, so 2 years after it was made. Mm-hmm. And it was nominated for Best Writing that year as well.
Oh, wow.
Best Writing. It wasn't screenplay yet. Right. They had... It was still original versus adapted, but it wasn't called that. It was like Best Screenplay, Best Screen Story, or something like that.
Huh, okay.
The Sight and Sound List, the very first one,
yeah.
You know, the newest one just came out in 2022.
Yeah.
With Jean Dielman on the front. Love it.
Jean Dielman.
In 1952, it was their very first best of list.
Yeah.
And it was only 10 films.
Oh, wow.
But Bicycle Thieves, a mere 4 years after it was made, was number one on the best films of all time.
Oh shit.
In 1952.
Do you happen to have that list, the rest of it?
I can get it in 1 second.
Don't worry, I'm gonna vamp real quick. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. Oh. What do I say? But like, I think that that's such an interesting, I mean, the Sight and Sound List, mm-hmm. at this point, what they have, like 100, the best 100.
Yeah.
And
then there's the like director's 50.
Right. Well, and I've even seen like, you know, people releasing, like the directors listing their top 10.
Yes.
Lists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all time, which is really I think that's even more fascinating.
I'll have to show you my, I have that in the newest issue of Sight and Sound.
Oh, so awesome. Yeah. Because I've been seeing them pop up on Twitter, and yeah. it's interesting yeah. seeing other like directors' top 10 lists.
Because a lot of them will try to throw in something obscure, and those are interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they don't make the list.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
it is cool to see like, oh, Martin McDonagh really loves this.
Yeah.
So number one was Bicycle Thieves in 1952.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number two was City Lights,
mm-hmm.
which was tied for number two with the Gold Rush.
That's interesting. Some Chaplin and then
DeSica, and then number four, fan. Battleship Potemkin.
Okay.
Five, Intolerance.
Okay.
Tied with Louisiana Story, which is a Robert Flaherty documentary.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen that though.
No, neither have I.
Number seven is Greed.
Okay.
By Eric von Stroheim. Number seven, Le Jour Se Lève. Marcel Kahn. Poetic Realism. Jean Gabin as a Man Who Kills for Love. Mm. 1939, so it is a talkie. Number seven, tied, The Passion of Joan of Arc.
Okay.
And then number 10, Brief Encounter.
Oh.
Some strange choices. Yeah. Tied for 10, Le Million. Okay. Renee Claire, 1931 musical comedy. And then tied for number 10 as well, The Rules of the Game.
That is a strange list.
It is. But, I mean, so many things weren't made in 1952 yet.
Sure.
That are mainstays in this list, you know. What's interesting is Citizen Kane didn't make the first list.
Yeah.
And that would be, like, the number one for the next, like, five of them.
Yes.
And so but it was number 11 on this list.
Citizen Kane was?
Yeah.
Huh.
So they had some runners-up up to 20.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean it is a strange list.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, it's number 1 in 1952, it's number 6 in 2002.
Okay.
And in the new poll, it is 41st.
Whoa.
How the mighty have fallen.
I know, the fall from grace.
But I mean it's impossible to have a lot of the cinema that we love without this. And definitely cinema that I love. Because I am a big fan of realism.
Yeah.
And all we of the, have, the derivations of that.
We wouldn't have Mumblecore.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. There's good and bad.
Yeah, that's true. But very inspirational to Satyajit Ray.
Uh-huh.
Who does the Apu trilogy, which I finally watched Pathar Panchali, which is just a fantastic, you know, he was very inspired by Bicycle Thieves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And compared to Bicycle Thieves, it's a lot more poetic. You know, there's a lot more shots of like, you know, algae in a pond, stuff like that. So, so it definitely has more poetry to it.
Right.
But it's still grounded in that.
Yes.
Let's tell a story of normal people.
Yeah.
Kurosawa was a huge fan of it.
Yeah.
And he says it influenced him. I can't see it too much, but...
you know.
Some Ken Loach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was another thing that I thought about pairing was Kez.
Yeah.
Because it's real people in Northern England.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kid in peril.
But
I love Kez so much.
I haven't seen it.
But Ken Loach and then also Lynn Ramsey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which you can definitely see, especially in earlier stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Is very much, let's work with people who.
Yes. Well, and you know, even if you're, you look at the films of Chloe Zhao.
Oh.
You know.
Chloe Zhao is definitely.
Like, so that's like even. A newer director that's like, you know, very neo, like, borderline
that
documentary.
The Rider.
Phenomenal. Yeah. So
I still
good.
Need to see that Songs. What is it?
Oh,
Songs from My Brothers or something. I can't remember. Yeah. But it's a Native American one. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
But also another big influence, Cinema Verite.
Yeah.
Which I fucking love, and direct cinema.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those, like, you know,
like D.A. Panabaker.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Don't Look Back. All those things.
Primary.
Yeah. Primary is interesting.
Yeah.
So let's hop into pairings.
Yeah.
I'll go first this week.
Go for it.
I found this movie this week.
Ah.
Wildlife. By Paul Dano.
Talk to your father. Tell him not to act like a fool.
I am not being foolish. I put my name on a list. I waited for my chance, and now they finally have a place for me.
You don't know anything about fires. You'll get burned up.
Well, I've been reading about them. I know enough.
You've been reading about them? You've been studying up?
Don't turn my words on me, Gene.
Dad, what's going on?
Your father is leaving us to go and fight those wildfires.
What? Dad, why?
Answer him, Jerry. You won't take a job at a grocery store, but you'll go out with a bunch of deadbeats and risk getting killed.
Yeah, I have to go there and leave.
What does it pay?
What?
What does it pay?
$1 an hour.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
It's from 2018.
Uh-huh.
And I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Stars Carey Mulligan,
mm-hmm.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's basically, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal gets fired and he can't provide for his family in 50s America. It's, I think, early 60s.
Right.
But but it's Montana, so like the
40s.
So you know, he gets fired and then he takes this job fighting fires.
Oh.
Nearby.
Yeah.
And it totally rips the family apart.
Oof.
And so it becomes this whole, like, you know, the kid is now seeing his parents in a different light. And his mom kind of has a complete crisis of identity of,
yeah,
you know, I used to be pretty and I used to have this plan for my life, and that hasn't happened at all.
Right.
We go from city to city and we fail each one. And, you know, should I try to find somebody better?
Man.
And it is a gut punch on a lot of scenes, but it's also just so fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
And it looks great. And I loved every fucking thing about it.
It's, you know, I really love Paul Dano as an actor.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see him make more.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Direct more, write and direct.
Well, and
more.
The fact that this is just 2018 is exciting.
Yeah.
His first movie directed.
You it's know. Crazy that, I mean, you know, he's been in Hollywood for a while, but he's also like, he is not the way he is an actor and a person of Hollywood. Like, he still is like, you know, kind of keeps to himself. He's not like, it just kind of flies under the radar as an actor. But then when he's in something, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's so good in everything that I've seen him in,
mm-hmm.
even if I don't like the movie very much.
Well, and I guess Jake Gyllenhaal like really wanted to be involved in the project. And he was talking about working with Paul Dano and how like he doesn't give you a lot. Like, you don't know if he's excited about it or not.
Yeah.
You think he is.
That sounds
about
right.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
But
I almost got to work on that movie.
Yeah.
Because it's shot partly in Oklahoma, but they said, I got a text that said, hey, do you want a grip for wildlife in Enid, Oklahoma, which is like an hour away from where we live? And I was like, fuck no, I don't want to work on some wildlife documentary in Enid. And I missed...
Look at this possum.
I missed the opportunity to work for a week on wildlife.
Yep, you're a real idiot, that's for sure.
Big old dum-dum.
You could have gotten tea for Paul Dano.
God, if only. Oh.
But no, I mean, I highly, highly recommend it. It is a magical movie.
Yeah, that sounds phenomenal.
So what'd you go with,
so
my friend?
So I went with something a little different. So I went with the theme of stolen bike movies.
Perfect.
Because this is a great stolen bike movie.
Yeah.
And I was like...
The stolen bike. A verse.
Yeah, and I think this fits perfectly. So I went with 1985's Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
What exactly leads you to believe the Soviets were involved?
Well, I know that
let me be honest with you. Hundreds of bikes are stolen every month. Very few of them are ever recovered. We just don't have the resources.
You're saying you can't do anything? My bike means everything to me. I knew the police wouldn't help.
Do you know what I would do if I were you?
What?
I'd retrace my steps.
I parked my bike, and when I came back, it was gone.
Well, can you think of anyone who might have wanted to take it?
Everyone wanted my bike. This morning, right before it got stolen, Francis offered... Francis!
But like it,
well, I don't know about that.
It's that weird voice he does sometimes.
It just like fluctuates all the time.
Love him.
He's great. Well, and this speaks more to how my life has been recently. It's not been super fun, but like also like it. This movie is so fucking fun.
Yeah.
It is just
an immediate salve.
Yes. And so like you watch Bicycle Thieves.
Yeah.
You're devastated.
Devastated.
And then you turn around, you're uplifted by Pee-wee.
Yep.
And you know, I think one interesting aspect that I was like, man, is this could this work better? Maybe. And I don't think it needs to, but an interesting way to watch it is you have Bruno, little boy,
yeah,
and Antonio, who's a full-grown man, go through this odyssey to find a bike.
Yeah.
And experiencing life is, they're kind of outsiders, because like I think that story kind of enhances that. You get this feeling of them being isolated in this world, and I think that happens in Pee-wee. This is ridiculous, but I loved it. And Pee-wee is kind of he's a man child.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get both perspectives in this one character.
He's father and son.
Yes, he's his own dad. But it's just like it's an odyssey across the country.
Yeah,
and it's a blast. And also the child star at the very end, who's real shitty, looks exactly like Bruno.
Yeah, that kid from Wonder Years.
Yeah, yeah, the big brother.
Yeah.
But but no, it's
so fun.
But I think it is just like one of those like art, and I wouldn't call Pee-wee's Big Adventure trash, but it is not high art. But it is so fucking fun to watch. So if you want to be devastated for a long period of time, go with Spike's pairing. If you want to balance,
and I always do.
If you want to balance it out, because I almost went with The Road, which I think works, but that is
bleak,
heartbreaking. So I was like, you know what? I need an uplifting bit right now. So so that's my pairing.
It works, and you know,
it does.
That thief compared to Francis.
Oh yeah,
perfect.
Oh,
I think,
yeah,
you know, the seer is clearly Large Marge.
Large Marge, yeah.
Basement of the Alamo is...
There's a great dance number in both, you know, at the beginning with...
I just also like the idea of one going into the next of you end with Antonio and Bruno walking off sad, and then you start with
a breakfast
machine.
It's incredible.
I love it.
Also, you could view it as Pee-wee is just Bruno grown up.
It's perfect.
Just watch it as a sequel to Bicycle Thieves.
It definitely was. That was part of the plan, I'm sure.
Tim Burton has gone on the
record. You mean Tim Burton's Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Sorry. Oh, my God. What have I been doing? Tim Burton's Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Too many apostrophe S's.
Why is that? Yes, it's hard.
Who owns this? So, next week, we're going to be taking a trip to the Isles of Ireland.
Yeah.
One that doesn't exist, called Inisherin.
Yes, yep. I was like, where is this? I don't think that place exists.
Yep. So we'll be talking about that next week and some of Martin McDonagh's plays that fit into this a little bit.
What fun.
Join us next week for that, as well as we will do a nominations episode where we will bitch about various things that were nominated.
It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy. thank you for joining us this week. We love you. And we'll see you next week for Banshees.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This podcast was created by Spike Alkire and Jake Kelly. The theme song is by Breck McGough. Thanks.
Hey.